A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to a very special episode of the Queen Pod, a very exciting one. She knows how to rock and roll. It's comedian and vocalist, Suze Kempner.
Thank you. I'm a vocalist now.
Yeah, well, I was going to put, vocalist. Is that right?
Thank you.
Is that right?
Yeah. Shall I put? I'm talking right now.
She knows how to rock and roll. It's comedian and singer, Suze Kempner.
Vocalist
is better.
Yeah.
Ain't no time for sleeping, baby. Soon it's round your street I'm creeping. You better be ready, Queen documentarian Simon Lupton.
Creeping in a street near you very soon. Yes, exactly. Hello.
Exactly. Originally I was going to give that one to Suze, and then I thought, no, she'd have to take out an injunction. I consider him a challenge before the whole human race. Here's comedian John Robbins.
Thank you very much. That's my favourite so far, I think.
Oh, good. I mean, I don't put any effort into these. Make the bed, light the light. It's me, Ro, your host. And we are here this week to discuss Queen Around the World, Queen and Adam Lambert. Around the World, which is an awesome thing to be doing because we have the great fortune of, while recording the podcast, Queen have released a new album, a number one album.
Woo!
Yeah.
Thank you for that. Queen and Adam Lambert live around the world. It is a wonderful thing. So we've had a good old listen to it and we thought we'd whiz you guys through it and, you know, hopefully you guys will check it out because it is wonderful if you haven't already grabbed hold of it already. So yeah, have we all had fun with this?
Yes.
Yeah, do we have any stats on how it got to number one, on how many sales it had? Or because there was an article about the battle between Queen and modern K-pop phenomenon
whose name I can't remember.
Is it Blackpink? I've got the top five. I haven't got the sales, but I've got the top five that we've had this week. So it reached number one. So Queen and Adam Lambert, live around the world, reached number one on the UK charts on the 9th of October. It's Queen's 10th number one in the UK, their first since Made in Heaven back in November 95, almost 25 years ago, and nearly 45 years since their first number one album, A Night at the Opera, back in December 75. And the top five albums in the UK charts in the week ending the 9th of October 2020 was number five, Bon Jovi, with their album 2020. Number four, Songs from My Heart by Amanda Holden. She's doing well there. Number three, What's the Story, Morning Glory, Oasis. I think, is that just sits at number three at like all times? Is that what goes on?
It's just always
number
in the top five.
Unless that's incredibly incorrect. Number two, The Album by Blackpink. Ooh, that's the K-pop band that you were talking about. The number one, Live Around the World, Queen and Adam Lambert. Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah,
so there was a real war, I think, because they've done a lot, actually, I think, Queen, to, you know, let everyone know it's out there. And it is a cracking album as well. There's so many good songs on it.
On the official chart website, they did a really exhaustive list of facts of Queen's Queen at number one. And there were a few about the amount of albums they've had get to number one.
Yeah.
So this was before it was confirmed that they'd got it. So this is their 10th. But Queen, I'll just run you through a couple of them quickly. Queen have 9 UK number one albums, the third most amongst British bands behind the Beatles and the Rolling Stones.
Wow.
The Queen are one of only 14 acts to claim 9 chart-topping albums, which is now 10. Queen have claimed top 3 albums in each of the last 5 decades, the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s and 2010s.
Wow.
And now 2020s.
And now 20. Yeah. Well, I don't think they've done all. Yeah. Now 2020. So another
six
record.
Decades.
What's that? 6 decades? That's awesome.
Span.
Queen have spent 21 weeks at number one on both the singles and album charts. And this is quite extraordinary. Queen's Greatest Hits has spent 902 weeks on the official album chart top 100, the third most ever behind ABBA's Gold and Bob Marley and the Wailers' Legend.
Wow. So that's 18 years, nearly.
Yeah. So wow. I think that the having 10 number one albums bumps them above a few other people. Mm. I think even potentially Bob Dylan.
I have all 3 of those albums.
Do you? Yeah. Well, everyone does, according to those stats.
But Queen Greatest Hits was the first one of those I got. Queen for life.
It's amazing. If you look at Queen's Greatest Hits on the albums charts, obviously it has like every chart position they've had every week, and it just keeps... It's just always there,
yeah, it
basically.
Is. Yeah.
And I think it's in the top 30 at the minute.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
It's such a good compilation album. It's so, so good. As is this. You know, what struck me... I mean, I'm amazed that it's a single CD, actually. You've got, 20... I mean, corking live tracks on there. And it is packed with songs. But what's amazing is almost how many songs aren't on there. Particularly missing for me is Dragon Attack from the 2015 tour. One of their biggest, probably their most famous song. I think their most famous song. Certainly their coolest. I know for a fact that Huey out of Fun Loving Criminals considered it his favourite Queen track. So I do. I absolutely adored it when they broke out in that one. But they have actually just selected a wonderful group of songs here. I thought we should just wander through them and have a chat. What do you think?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We'll try and get it done with some form of expediency compared to what we normally do, which is talk for hours about one little thing.
Do you have, Simon, any info about how it came about or when it was decided they were going to put an album out?
Yeah, it was when the tour had to be postponed. So delayed by a year, to sort of mark what would have been one of their shows, they did a watch party, which was sort of live online, where they just put together a collection of some of live moments that had been filmed, and people could watch it live and sort of come together in a sort of Queen party at the same time to watch something online. And that went down so well, and the fans just responded so positively to sort of the love of seeing some live content that I think it might have been Roger who just first mooted the idea, well, what about putting together a live album with an accompanying DVD? And so they set about choosing what tracks, which was sort of informed by obviously wanting to put some great hits on there, but also what concerts over those years they've been touring with Adam that had been filmed by more than just the cameras that film the concert for the screens. Because the thing you have about 11 cameras filming each show, but they are all close up because that's going to go on the screen at the back of the stage. And you don't want a big wide shot of the stage because the audience can see that for themselves. They want to be able to see close up what's going on. So you don't really get a sense of the scale of the show because they never show the audience and they never really show the whole stage in all its glory. But along the way, other cameras have been added for various reasons to create more of a spectacle. So that helped inform visually what tracks got picked. And they basically from that built a sort of a fake concert, if you like, spanning shows from 2014 right up to January 2020. And it finishes, as we'll get to later, with a set from the Firefight concert in Australia back in earlier this year. So I think it was sort of designed as a sorry we can't be on the road, hope this keeps you going until next year kind of thing.
Yeah, actually, before my question, I rather enjoyed the Instagram post from Brian and Roger. Did you guys see that? Where Brian sort of had the little, we're number one, just really sweet little, you know, and very nice. And then Roger was already down the pub. Yeah. Absolute legend, toasting us. But he did make that point. He did sort of gently say, I hope this makes up in some way for the delay on the tour, which I thought was brilliant, actually. Really, really, really cool. But my question for you is, how many GoPros did Roger end up with on his drum kit, do you think, since you, me and producer Giles, by which I mean producer Giles, put two GoPros on his drum kit back at the last performance of We Will Rock You?
We Will Rock You. You're right. We did, didn't we? I think there's about three, possibly four GoPros sort of mounted on the drum kit.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
To get those shots. But yeah. It's they're great because you get really up close and personal to what Roger's
I love
doing.
That, and I also like the is it a needle camera that Brian has on the fret of his guitar sometimes, that just a pen camera or something that looks on the fret. It looks amazing.
It goes on the spare guitar that he uses for Fat Bottom Girls because there's no way they're going to screw a camera to the Red Special.
No,
that would be sacrilege. But he uses a spare one for Fat Bottom Girls because it's down tuned.
Cool.
Guitarists will know why you would do that. But so they mount and they use that on some of the tours. It's not on any of the DVD content, but I've seen footage from those shows where you're getting a fantastic view of you know Brian on the fretboard, what he's doing. And sometimes he then spins it round and points it at the audience.
So, I have to say, listening to the album does really make me want to get the Blu-ray, because you do get a couple of extra tracks on the Blu-ray as well, don't you? You get the amazing drum battle. Is that between
Roger and Rufus, his son
Roger
Rufus.
And Rufus, fantastic.
Which is incredible. And a guitar solo, which was Last Horizon as well. There simply wasn't space on the CD, I understand. Physical space. It's not a creative choice. It was literally, we couldn't put enough on there. And they went with the big hits, which is understandable.
Yeah. But you got your CD for the car. I'm totally going to get the Blu-ray because I want to see Blu-ray. This stuff.
Well,
yeah,
also, one thing that is worth pointing out, even though it sounds obvious, is what you don't get with the CD is the incredible spectacle of the show they put on.
Yeah.
Which when I saw them at the O2, absolutely blew my mind. I'd never seen anything even approaching the light show they had.
Yeah.
And I don't think they had the one with Frank on that enormous mesh screen.
Yeah, they got a giant robot.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned physically. You mentioned that on a previous pod, didn't you? That how amazing Frank punching through the screen, and that's on the Blu-ray and DVD.
Yeah,
the show opens with "Tear It Up," and that's from that tour. So you unfortunately the DVD and Blu-ray never does it quite the justice that it is. But isn't that the point? You go to see it live because it's much more. But it goes a long way to showing you just how extraordinary that effect was.
Yeah. But also the sort of clouds and rainbow lights that they had during, I think it was Love of My Life.
No, it was Who Wants to Live Forever.
Who Wants to Live Forever?
Yeah.
That is insane how they did that.
Yeah.
It was like being in, it's the sort of thing you would feel like you would pay that just to see the lights alone, like you would go to sort of a planetarium to watch it. It was extraordinary.
Yeah.
Well, as one of the first people to actually go and see the Millennium Dome when it was first erected, very early on in January, I was one of those guys. Me and my sister went down there and we watched
one of
the
only
Millennium
people
Dome
to
show.
Go and see the Millennium Dome.
Actually, now that I think of it, it wasn't busy. And and I got to say,
I could have been on Have I Got News For You in 2003 with that level of feeling.
Was there something to do with Queen? Because I went to the Millennium Dome. It was me.
Honestly, all I remember was this thing called Float, where you'd sit inside a womb. This is not important. All I was saying
was, anything to do with Queen.
Queen. All I'm trying to do is say that Queen have done the best live show in
since the
O2
Millennium Dome.
Since ever, actually. Do you know what? That was a very... All of it has to be cut for time, so rely on that. You're right. The album does open with Tear It Up from the O2 gig in London on the 2nd of July 2018, which was the fourth leg of their 2017 to 2018 tour. And what a cool way to open up. I mean, I don't think they'd played Tear It Up that much since, certainly not since the Radio Gaga tour. And it was such a welcome opening. I love that track. I think it's the second track on the works. And I've always loved it. And I thought it was just a brilliant opening. So, yeah, loved it. Absolutely brilliant. And then they go into Now I'm Here, which was from Summer Sonic in Tokyo in Japan in 2014. And there's some very, very cool bits in here. There's this really lovely bit which seems to refer to something going on in the audience. And Simon, you might know about this. There's a couple of bits that I want to play from here. Just how awesome it is when it actually just kicks in. And then there's a couple of little bits of business with the audience that I think are fun and worth listening to. Yeah. I mean, this album needs to be listened to very loudly in the car or very loudly on your headphones at maximum volume. It's not for listening out of your tinny computer speakers at all. It will immerse you. You will hear the crowds going and that roar from them. But also, sorry, how many drums does Roger actually have, please? That is enormous. All over it. It's phenomenal. They're all of them. You've got the Duke's keyboards flying over the top there and everything. Oh, it's just a huge, wondrous. And again, you know, we were talking about this on Sheer Heart Attack Part 1, that Now I'm Here is a track that they've always played live, pretty much. I don't think it's ever... Certainly it was in there all the way up to the Magic Tour. And I don't think they've dropped it post-Magic Tour. I think
It's a deserved regular, isn't it? And I think you could argue one of the best openings they had, you know, on their live tours when they would open a show with it. Mm. Because you've got the crowd really anticipating it, and then as soon as they hear that guitar start, the audience just goes into an absolute frenzy. And then if you can imagine, as you're hearing that initial Now I'm Here, you're just seeing a silhouette of Adam on one side of the screen, on one side of the stage, and then he appears on the other. And then as it kicks in, the curtain drops and the lights come on and the noise begins. So you know, if you've got anyone left standing after that opening 2 minutes,
I know, right?
You've done really well.
Absolutely righteous. I've got something to say about people standing at gigs. Basically, I will say this. So I think, I mean, I've been lucky enough to see them every tour since the, you know, including the tribute, and then I've seen them live, you know, ever since then, which is really cool and very privileged and very happy. And what I've noticed is certainly in the initial part of that, it was like really, really strong Queen fans. And then as time has worn on, I've found that some of the seated areas are maybe people who feel like they should see Queen while they can or something like that. Is that fair to say? And it just, I'm always there because I'm too old and fat to stand anymore. So I always sit up in the gods, and then I'm leaping up and jumping about from the very beginning, and everyone around me is like, we can't see. And then by the time we're into track two, it doesn't. Everyone is up. Mm. Everyone is up. You can't not, because they always kick off so righteously, and it is that first sort of 10 minutes of a Queen gig is. It's like a rocket taking off. Absolutely love it. There's just that nice little bit where he says, down in the front row, just Freddie and me. And I just wondered if it was something that's picked up on the DVD, but I'm not sure. I don't know if it's worth discussing.
He sings it and he gets a cheer, doesn't it? But there's the bit later on where he goes, all quiet.
Tokyo. Now I'm here. Boy,
it's really
sing.
Nice that they you have these different mentions of different places all throughout the album, because it's one sort of point of difference it has from like a Queen live album, a previous Queen live album, is they tended to be one gig. So it's Queen Rock Montreal or Live at Milton Keynes or Wembley in 86. Whereas this is by necessity a sort of a greatest hits of the tours. So it's nice that you get that feeling that this one's in London and this one's in Tokyo and this one's in Australia. I really. So you do feel you are live around the world.
Yeah.
What we've got up next is a little bit of Another One Bites the Dust, which is funky as all heck. It's so good. Really joyful there. And then we get Fat Bottom Girls from the American Airlines Center in Dallas, USA in 2019, where they played with the, is it the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders? Which was such an outrageous rock and roll move. I'm sure a lot of you have seen that clip on YouTube. But is that on the Blu-ray, that particular?
Yeah.
All the girls come out and dance, and it's so outrageous.
It is. It looks amazing. They are so incredible to watch. They are just brilliant, you know. And, you know, Brian is doing one of the longest guitar solos I think he does, you know, on a live set. And they are
on
just,
purpose.
Yeah, dancing away the whole way without dropping any kind of energy level. They are incredible. I mean, they are athletes, aren't they? to manage that.
Absolutely.
It's incredible. But there's a lovely bit where Adam sings the line, "No beauty queens in this locality," and he's just absolutely surrounded. And he actually, as he sings it, he goes, "Well, actually, you know, it's a nice moment."
Yeah, well, and they've lost none of their sense of humour there, right? Their tongue is as firmly in cheek as it's ever been. Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Yeah, phenomenal. Should we listen to a tiny bit of Fat Bottom Girls? Is
that
worth doing?
I
think so. I just thought it might be nice to listen to a bit of the from towards the end. Now get on your bikes and ride! I mean, Adam can really sing. The man can sing. You know, I think it's wonderful. I think for me, this was particularly the last tour I saw them do, which was the one that John was talking about, was, I think, the first time where, you know, Freddie is always present in these gigs, and Adam always has this wonderful attitude of, look, I'm just here to help us all enjoy the music, and that is clear. But I think on this last tour, they are legit. They came across legit as their own band in their own right, and I think they gelled together so well. And Adam can freaking sing these songs so well. He's so brilliant. I love him on it, and he has that flamboyance and makes the whole thing a party as it's ever been. So yeah. Yeah, that's what I got to say about Mr. Lambert.
I don't think there is anyone who doesn't wish that Freddie could be doing this. I think that's a given, and I include Adam in that. But you're right; he's up there doing an amazing job at enabling us to go along and still see them live.
Yeah.
And you know, like you, I'm grateful for him for doing it and for them carrying on, because it's still a wonderful thing to be able to go and see and hear these amazing songs.
Yeah.
How does his voice compare to Freddie's, Suze? Because he sounds to me like a sort of West End musical director's dream.
Yeah.
He's got that amazing musical theatre sort of voice.
Yes. So Adam comes from musical theatre, and he quit the musical Wicked to audition for American Idol. Presumably because he had it on quite good authority that it would do him good, and it definitely did. So he has the sort of dream musical theatre voice, like you say. He can go in any direction with it. There's footage online of him singing a very sweet, legit musical theatre song from a musical called Brigadoon, and you'd never know it was him. He can put his voice in any song in any place, and there couldn't be a better lead singer for Queen in to be able to tour with now, like we say, especially because he clearly grew up listening to Queen. He clearly loves Queen, and you need a tenor to sing Freddie's songs, even though Freddie was not a tenor. He was a baritone with this unique way of being able to pull his baritone voice up into dizzy heights that don't sound that high when he does it, because it's such a thick sound. So when Adam does it, you suddenly go, oh, this amazing guy with this really high tenor voice, you can then hear how high these songs are, but you get to hear them sung so brilliantly.
Yeah.
He's just one of the best singers I've ever heard. Yeah, Adam Lambert. Wow. And when I saw him, because I watched American Idol when he was on it in, I think, 2009. And I remember in the final, I went, oh my God, it's Queen, oh my God. Because they came out as that special guest and they sang We Are The Champions. Adam didn't even win the show, he came second. But I remember watching it and just being like, oh, this is really special, them playing with him. And I thought, I wonder if they known about him before, and from what I can tell they hadn't. It just was pure serendipity that it just seemed perfect when he sang We Are The Champions with Queen in the American Idol final, and I went, oh, he should tour with Queen, he should tour with Queen. And then literally about 2 years later, Adam Lambert's touring with Queen.
You should totally be an A&R, Suze. That's so cool. And actually that I think that story is well told in a documentary called The Show Must Go On, the Queen and Adam Lambert story. Is made by some English white guy.
Some guy.
I can't remember who it is, but I think it's on Netflix, and it's such on a great Netflix. Watch. You should check it out. Definitely check it out. Right, so there's a couple of tracks. A brilliant version of Don't Stop Me Now from Rock in Rio in Lisbon, Portugal, 2016. And I Want to Break Free from the same gig. But I want to move on to Somebody to Love from the Isle of Wight Festival in 2016. And there's this, they just do this awesome thing with the track that I would say that on balance, Somebody to Love must be my favourite Queen song. So I have some bias here. But I think it is their best track for me personally. And they do this crazy thing at the end of it.
Come on, Isle of Wight, I want to see you get crazy. Can you get my lead? Somebody true. Come on!
I've got to be careful about playing the end of tracks from live tracks because the endings are so huge. But wow, what a glorious surprise, and just made everyone have a big old freaking dance at the end. I love that they're bold with stuff live. And there was that lovely tour where Brian sort of did sort of an acoustic-y opening to Hammer to Fall one time and stuff like that, you know. Yeah. What do we think of Somebody's Love?
It's great. And you can hear there that Adam's voice is kind of closer to Roger's sound than Freddie's. And the whole arrangement, apart from that ending, that the whole arrangement and the way Adam sings it is it more reminiscent of the George Michael version. And it makes it more than just a cover of a Queen song. It's like a great version of the song.
Like, I think when they first started working with him, a lot of people were saying, like, he's not Freddie, what he can't do that Freddie could do. But actually, the more you listen to it, the more you realise there are also a lot of things Adam can do that Freddie couldn't do. And that final sort of belt there is a really good example of that, because Freddie wouldn't hit that note for that long in that way. He would do something different. So they both offer something different to the songs.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think Adam is now relaxed into his role with the band in a way that enables him to do what he wants to do with the songs without taking anything away from their history at all. In fact, he's building on it. And I think it's righteous. They are being bold with their music. And I love it. It's a real party, that moment. I think it's just awesome.
And they sound awesome together. Yeah. I know that it says on the documentary, they say, like, no one can believe we're actually doing all our harmonies live. And then they show them doing the harmonies before the show, and it's so awesome. But again, because Adam's come from musical theatre where your voice has to blend with a company, he's able to just slot in into that with Brian and Roger. It's really cool.
There is a moment that I remember from your documentary, Simon, the show must go on, where Roger says with this lovely little smile on his face, Adam could sing anything. absolute confidence. Yeah. Boy can sing anything. he really can.
The fact that Adam makes it look effortless.
Yeah.
Is no small
thing. OMT.
Well, you sometimes think about female vocalists with them. I think that, you know, someone like Lady Gaga, who I think is a big Queen fan, obviously. And was it Jessie J who sang with them?
Was it the Olympics?
You know, but I think in Adam they've just found a fantastic.
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, you see, because in the 92 Freddie tribute concert, it's like we need every one of these singers to do a different song because no one could do all of them. And then with Adam, you can do all of the songs.
Yeah. And also, it is lovely listening to their sound in 2020. They've got a huge sound. It's still very Queen, but it feels very current. They've just treated every track in its own, with its own little production value. I just love how all the tracks sound on this album. Speaking of which, we're up to Love Kills, the ballad, which is a Freddie track that we've never heard. Freddie never really performed live. Is that right? Maybe not so much. Yeah. Anyway, he never toured like Mr. Bad Guy or anything, did he? Yeah. It is a wonderful song, and it's a wonderful version of the song. The bit that excites me the most is sort of when it goes all Frankie Goes to Hollywood, which I really like. Is that all right if we don't listen to the actual ballady bit? Do you guys mind?
Not at all.
Looking through your emotions, open invitation to your heart. Love kills. You can play with your emotions, open invitation to your heart. Love kills. Play with your emotions, open invitation to your heart. Love kills. Love kills. Love, 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 love. Love kills. Kills you through your heart. Love kills.
on and on, and it's so difficult to stop playing these tracks. Oh my god. Yeah, huge version of the track. Really fun.
Stunning.
Really, really fun. Yeah.
It's worth perhaps just sort of a nod to Neil Fairclough, who's the bassist with Queen and Adam Lambert, who I've had the pleasure of meeting. He's not only a lovely guy, but I think is a phenomenal bass player and is a massive fan and lover of John Deacon as a performer. So in the way that Adam is paying homage to what Freddie did, Neil is absolutely doing that to John as well. And I just think you listen to some of the bass lines on these songs and they are incredible.
You kind of forget there's a bassist at some points, and then it's like, oh wow, not only is there a bassist, but he's a phenomenal bassist as well.
Yeah. I mean, Bites the Dust and Under Pressure, my god. Absolutely awesome. They also do I Was Born to Love You, which was Freddie track. So the Love Kills ballad versions from the iHeart Radio Theatre in LA in 2014, and then I Was Born to Love You was from Summer Sonic in Tokyo. And then on the Blu-ray you get Drum Battle, which is awesome, and then we get into Under Pressure, which is great fun, isn't it?
Yes,
I love Roger's vocals on this. I love how Roger's sort of gravelly voice contrasts with Adam's more sort of polished range. I think it's super, that track especially.
Yeah. Because it is a duet. That track is a duet. Yeah. And Roger has always played an important part in the live versions of, I think, Under Pressure. Mm-hmm. But he is very
I can't
much
wait
at
for us
here,
to get to Under Pressure when we actually, the album track Under Pressure.
Oh, yeah. Well, we get Top Space.
Yeah,
absolutely. My God. Now we're on to. So that was Under Pressure was from New York in 2019. We're back to Isla White now for Who Wants to Live Forever. Should we listen to a little bit of that? Who dares?
Thank you.
play the whole track. I just want to play the whole track. I hope that... Basically, I love the sound of Brian's guitar in that solo, that lovely...
Oh, yeah, it's stunning.
Oh, it's beautiful. Stunning. It's like silk. Kind of that sound that he has on Lost Horizon and Bijou, and he's kind of got that going on stage, and I love that. But I imagine you've got a thing or two to say about how Mr. Lambert gets his mouth around this
song. It's my favourite track on the album, and it's got so much behind it, because this is an amazing song anyway, and we heard Freddie sang it live on the Magic Tour, didn't he? But this was performed the night after there was a shooting by a terrorist in a gay bar in Orlando, Florida.
Yeah.
I think 50 people were killed, and this is probably a bit deep, but Adam is clearly singing with a huge amount of emotion, and Adam, who's openly gay himself, singing this song the night after that attack makes this like a really special musical moment. And it's not just about that. This is about Freddie and everything. And I had to take a moment when I heard this on the CD for the first time. It's just really incredible. And then aside from that is his astonishing vocal in this. Like, that's just a crazy masterclass in rock singing.
Well said. It's
incredible.
It sort of shows how easy that track would have been to pick for the album. But I wonder with the other songs, it must have been really difficult, because if you're, say, recording Wembley 86, what I'm guessing you do is you record both concerts there, you pick the best concert, and if there's an absolute complete car crash of a song where everything breaks, you maybe edit in the audio from the other concert. But with this, because they had so much to choose from, say they've got 10 concerts, so you've got 10 versions of, I don't know, Another One Bites the Dust, and Brian really likes his guitar on one, and Roger really likes his drums on another, and Adam really likes his vocals on a third. How on earth do you make that decision? Because there's never going to be a perfect version of every song that everyone's happy with, but I think with Who Wants to Live Forever, it seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah. It's the quintessential Queen moment on the album as well, because there's something really unique about Queen, who had this openly gay lead singer. They were kind of this LGBT-friendly rock band. It's unique.
Was he openly gay? I think that's one of the yeah, for sure. But I think
he wasn't actually.
For me, I think all of that happened. I think you make a good point, which is his passing shone a huge light on what was happening with the LGBTQ community. Certainly, what was happening with that dreadful disease. And part of his legacy has been enabling quite a lot of people who may have been a little myopic about these elements of our of society and elements of that part of our society, that section of our society, and enable people to soften their bloody attitude to it, finally.
Well, I think also what Adam brings, and this is also, you know, what 40 years brings, or nearly 40 years, is that Queen can occupy a more, slightly more political space than the attitudes of the time allowed them to in the 80s. And, you know, in a way that Adam would never have to go through the kind of questioning from the press that Freddie got, they're now able to align themselves with those issues on stage And that's a good, it's still a bad thing that at times they couldn't in the past, but it's a good thing that they can now. Yeah. And it makes for a very poignant moment on the album.
I think you're absolutely right. And they're a big symbol for me of, they're a light in terms of what direction progress should be going. just in their attitude, musically, lyrically, and physically, literally how they present themselves. Mm. And unfortunately, I think we're living in a world that is unfortunately retreating from that in some ways. So long live Queen is what I say about that. Mm. Right. Who Wants to Live Forever? Amazing, amazing. If you have got the Blu-ray, you'll have a beautiful guitar solo from Brian based on Last Horizon, which is a gorgeous piece of music. And then we are into, just a huge anthem in The Show Must Go On, another track that sadly we never got to hear Freddie play live. But thanks to Adam Lambert, we get a wonderful, wonderful rendition of it here.
His voice actually reminds me of Axl Rose's voice, but like if Axl Rose had never drunk or smoked.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, it's Axl. It's a very disciplined Axl Rose sound. Yeah. Yeah. Again, shows how high Freddie's singing on that recording, because the I'll face it with a grin, I've never given in. Even Adam has to be strategic with his breathing.
Oh, really?
to create that. It's so good. It's so good.
It always makes me think, say Queen had toured Innuendo, where they would have put The Show Must Go On and Innuendo in a set list, because they're such colossal tracks, and you kind of think you have to end with The Show Must Go On, but you can't, because you have to end with We Are the Champions and We Will Rock You. So how do you fit such a colossal bookendy type track in amongst a sort of 20 song live show?
When I saw We Will Rock You, it opens with innuendo, but with the Queen version playing and then text on the screen. And it was my favourite bit of the show. It's so, like, the opening of innuendo is the perfect opening to a show.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. It's an amazing piece of music, and I think that's right. Their set list, their running orders are always genius. I have to think about running orders a lot in my life, the stuff that I do, and I think it's all entirely programmed into my DNA by Queen. And I think you're right, they would place innuendo sort of middle of the gig, kind of, you know, with far away enough from Bohemian Rhapsody and the good distance away from their opening massive number, and it'd sit there in the middle of a gig like a bloody anvil.
You almost need the deeper cuts over the course of one show just to take a breather from the hits and from those massive rock tracks, so you can understand why they did things like the sort of rock and roll medley and sort of some slower tracks. Because
just to give us all a chance to breathe.
Well, it's a bit like the sort of function that Love Kills and I Was Born to Love You play on this, because it would almost be too overwhelming if it was essentially just great hits one and two tracks back to back. So they've obviously had to thought about that, and I think the way that they finish with the which we're about to come on to finish with the Live Aid set is really, really clever.
Is it worth having a quick chat about Love of My Life? Because I think it is one of the most beautiful renditions of Love of My Life that I've ever seen. This was from the O2 gig in 2018.
Is this the track where Freddie sings and I cried in my car?
Yeah. That's sort of the bit that I want to play. because mainly because I want to make John cry.
Blubbing on my way back from away through Cheshire.
I mean, Brian sings this song beautifully, and he has got a lovely. He's got such a lovely relationship with the audience. He's so intimate when he comes to this little bit where it's just him and the guitar and a spotlight on these gigs, playing songs like this and 39. This particular rendition of it, I think, got absolutely everybody when Freddie came in at the end on a screen behind him. And I'm actually just going to just play this bit of the track because you could just hear us. You could hear the crowd having a real moment, actually. And it's captured on a CD, which is amazing.
For the rest of you, let's go!
I remember when I don't know if I've mentioned this, but when I technically supported on stage,
sure.
And in that short sort of 15-minute set, I think it was 15 minutes, maybe 20 minute set they did on the Millennium, when they had Freddie come up in that, it just absolutely knocks you out. But I do remember thinking over a short set, it took too much space, and it was like there wasn't enough of Adam and the band,
right,
for Freddie not to sort of overwhelm that with his very short cameo.
Mm.
But I think over the course of a concert show and over the course of this album, it's absolutely perfect because it doesn't make you think, oh, I wish it was that. It just sort of punches you in the gut, and then you're back to the band. So I think the balance is just right.
Honestly, when I'm at a modern day Queen gig, I genuinely can't help but feel that Freddie's giving us all a massive hug through the whole thing. He's so present, and his placement there in particular was just one that obviously you miss the guy so much. It's so poignant, but there's also this enormous warmth that the whole room is sharing, particularly with Brian. And there was that beautiful, I think this is the main reason I want to get the Blu-ray, actually, is because it's just that moment where right at the end of the track on the video, and I was sat in the perfect position, Freddie does that little Freddie point, and Brian kind of almost gives him that fist bump back, and it's... and it was just it was beautiful. It looked like they were together again just for one moment there, and it's really magical.
You sort of can't even call it theatrics. I mean, Queen were such a theatrical band live, but you can't even call that theatrics. It's too real. Real
actrics. Yeah, it is. Real actrics. It's certainly still innovative. They are still innovating. Yeah. They're still 100% dedicated to their stagecraft. Just a phenomenal band.
Mm.
So we are now moving into the Live Aid set, if you like, which was from the Firefight Australia concert on Sunday the 26th of February 2020. It was a fundraiser to help with the bushfire crisis that Australia was facing, known as the Black Summer. And in the end, that entire thing raised $9.85 million for the Bushfire Relief Charities, which is phenomenal. Mm. The band recreated their famous Live Aid performance, including footage and audio of Freddie's AOs from the 86 Wembley performance, the one which we all love. what a brilliant idea just to do a little run of their best freaking set, the best live set any band has ever done anywhere. Really cool. I'm sure you've got a lot to say about this one, Simon.
It is great. It's a great way to end the album, actually, and it works so well on the DVD as well, because you get consumed by this sort of mini concert, really, with the weight of the fact that that Live Aid is so present in our mind for anyone who saw the movie, of course. It's the climax of that to relive it, and we've all sort of been delving back into it as a result. So to see it recreated again is wonderful, and it's actually such a great collection of songs. They just move into each other so well. You know, they play that little bit of Bohemian Rhapsody, and then, you know, Brian finishes the guitar solo, and you're straight into Radio Gaga, and then the AOs finish, and there's this wonderful minute where you see Freddie turn and walk off stage on the screen as Brian rocks into Hammer to Fall riff at the beginning. And then you get that sort of like cheeky little crazy little thing called Love moment, which just can't help but listen to with a smile on your face. And then you finish with those two monster tracks that you finish every concert with.
I do want to play the opening of Bohemian Rhapsody, because I think it's such a brilliant way to kick off this little run. It is also, I mean, it is a 2:20 version of Bohemian Rhapsody, which I actually rather like. Just a very efficient Bohemian Rhapsody to make us all happy and get into more Queen, please. So here we go.
What's so incredible is that is a charity gig that had loads of acts on, some huge Australian acts as well. I mean, if you go on YouTube, you can see at the end there's a big finale with John Farnham singing You're the Voice.
Wow.
Brian joins in on as well. He plays with it.
Really?
Yeah, it's great. It's really worth
that out. I love
trying
that
to find. But you listen to that and they have the crowd.
Oh, yeah.
Within
right.
30 seconds. But if you're an Australian act playing on a mixed bill and the Queen come on and play their live set, surely you're thinking, come on, guys. That's not fair.
I guess they've got the voice.
You're the voice.
So they play Radio Gaga, of course. It is fantastic. And the AOs are one. I mean, they're just wonderful. And
I love that they play Freddie doing it rather than, because Adam could do some AOs with the crowd. We know it works.
Yeah.
But it's cool. It's really cool that they get Freddie.
He does play, doesn't he, Adam? He will do a little bit of call and response with the crowd, but he's not going to tread on Freddie's toes in any way. He does it in his own little way, often during a song or something like that. Or he'll go, do you want to play? And everyone goes, yeah, you know, and then he'll do it. But wonderful to get Freddie on for that. I just bloody love Hammer to Fall. It's an amazing song. So I'm going to play a little bit of that, if that's all right, from my favourite section of the track.
We'll be right back.
It's not easy There's to stop.
One of Freddie's most difficult notes is in Hammer to Fall, but it's really disguised, so you have to really listen very closely to the track. But there's an insane note he hits in the album version of Hammer to Fall. So I'll have to give that another listen to see how Adam gets around it. Or,
oh yeah, I'm going to listen. I'm going to listen.
Whereabouts is it? Yeah. Do we know? Is it worth finding?
I think it might be Baby Now Your Struggles All in Vain. But I'm not entirely sure. It's not like the lead vocal.
Right.
You know in Under Pressure where it goes up and then it goes up and then it goes up again, but you can only just hear it.
Yeah.
There's a similar moment on Hammer to Fall with Freddie's vocal.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'll find when we do the works.
Okay.
Yeah,
fair play.
I'm pretty sure whenever Freddie did it live, he always went down.
Oh, he jumps out of it. He goes,
"Oh, your struggles are in vain."
Yeah.
I bet sensible, Adam sensible. Doesn't.
No.
No.
I would love to know if there's any Queen songs Adam just vetoes because he's like, I'm not going anywhere. I can't get anywhere near that.
I'm sure it's not.
I bet he could sing any of them.
Yeah,
do you reckon?
Absolutely.
Well, but when he sang in the live version of Under Pressure on his album, he doesn't go because it's a G, a top G up to an A that Freddie sings on the album track. But like you say, he only touches it. I like that Adam's like going, I'm just going to stick a third below that. It's nice when you hear that because you go, oh, phew. He's not a god. He is but a man.
I don't think there is a song that they've got that he wouldn't have a go at all. All right. So they do a wonderful version of Crazy Little Thing Called Love. Do you know what? You can almost hear the glee on the tracks of them. They're enjoying playing these songs so much. They're enjoying being together so much on stage and making this fantastic sound for everybody who is enjoying them back. If you can see these guys live, you must see these guys live. There's just no getting around that fact. I'm going to play the very opening of We Will Rock You. When I say the very opening, I mean just a few seconds into the very opening, because I love what Brian's doing here. That is a song that the entire planet knows, and yet there's Brian just going bow, 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 and doing it all new and making it all fresh and fun and exciting, and he's got his funky little chicka-ching-chings going on all the way through the rappy bit. What a brilliant, brilliant, fun thing. Yes.
Yeah, I think after all these years, he's thought, why do I have to just stand at the side of the stage and look awkward while Freddie sings and Roger drums? I wrote this. I should be joining in.
When did they first start doing the fast version of this? Of We Were Rock
Fast version was that in was the 77 News of the World Tour, I think.
Yeah, so that was.
Oh, I see. That was from the off. They did that version.
It came from a discussion about whether they should open the show with "We Will Rock You," as in "We are going to rock you," or close it, because they all felt that it was a natural closer.
We have rocked you.
Because it partnered so well with "We Are the Champions." But then Freddie was going, but we're saying we're going to rock you at the end of the show when we've already rocked you. So the compromise was they came up with this fast version to open the show and then finished with the traditional.
Gotcha.
But there was a lot of fuss about 10 years ago about the discovery of the fast version of We Will Rock You or it being included on something. But I was always like, well, that's the version of Live Killers.
Yeah, it's been around since 79. Yeah.
77.
79. But they did it on the 77 tour, but Live Killers was 79, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. For all to hear is what I mean. Yeah, fantastic. Well, that brings us to the end of this glorious album with We Are the Champions. Shall we listen to a little bit of We Are the Champions and then summarise our thoughts and feelings? We are the champions, my friend. As an outrage, and obviously they're about to come back. We know they are, but that is just awesomeness. And I've got to say, everyone's pretty much in the mix there. That bass is driving that entire sequence, and my God, they're all going bananas, aren't they?
Yeah, Tyler Warren on the timpani there as well, just really going. Sounds amazing.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah, it's worth also giving a shout out to the rest of the band, like Simon said, because Spike Edney's there, as he has been for 30, 40 years now.
Yeah,
and he
amazing.
Plays beautifully, you know, the piano.
He was at Live Aid.
Yeah.
He played at Live Aid. He played at Wembley in 86.
I was just going to say, and the piano on Somebody to Love sounds exactly as Freddie would play it. You know, he puts that little detail into how he does it. Sorry, John, I cut you off today.
No, just to Spike Edney's a lovely guy.
Is he? Okay. good. Yeah, well, he's a legend. Yeah, absolutely. He was their sort of first person to play with them live, wasn't he? When they moved beyond just the four of them. Okay, so in the canon of live albums, I think I'll be putting this one on quite a lot. I love their live albums, and I have to say that some of their live albums I play more than others. This one I'm going to be listening to like a lot. I love the production on it. I love the emotion behind it. I love the energy behind it, the urgency behind it. And it's got a damn cool cover as well.
I think it's really interesting because as a sort of super Queen dweeb, you sort of look at the track listing and you think, oh, I wish there was some deep cuts on there. But then actually what this album is what Queen have been doing since 1973, which is giving as many people as possible the best night of their year on as big a scale as they can with as state-of-the-art technology that they can lay their hands on. So it's in a sense the quintessential Queen live album because it's, you know, a million people seeing a band, seeing a light display, listening to, you know, the best possible arrangements of those songs, an incredible singer, and walking away thinking, I won't see a better gig than that this year.
Yeah.
And that's what they've always been about, is being better than everyone else.
Yeah, they'll never phone it in.
Absolutely not.
And where this year has been, shall we say, up and down, with probably more down than up, This is actually genuinely just a lovely, joyful little gift from the band. It's put a song in my heart. It's put a spring in my step. I love listening to it. I love singing along to it. And it reminds me of, forgive me, Suze, it reminds me of all those gigs where I went to see them, and kind of brings back those big smiley memories for me as well. And I really hope that you will see them with us next year, Suze. I'm sure you will.
I will.
I'm sure you will.
I'll be
it's
there.
Looking good.
I've got tickets to be transferred from June this year to whenever Queen next play the O2.
You are going
get
to
see
lose your mind at that gig. You're going to come out. You're not going to be able to sing for weeks because you're completely.
I'll just be girl.
Off.
I'll just keep turning to people and going, oh god, oh my god.
You'll have pruned up from your own tears, like you'd been in a bath for 2 hours. And, yeah,
like a wrinkly
gonna be amazing.
Foot.
So how fun has this been to get a new album to chat about? I think it's really important that they all get in the studio and do a whole new album. Simon, have a word.
I think it's really important that Simon goes into the archives and releases all those songs that you can only find on YouTube in full remastered. I want to hear Feel Like. I want to hear all of the stuff that didn't make it on The Miracle and Innuendo, please, Simon.
Yeah, sure, no problem.
I want to hear it.
But yeah. First, just have a word and make sure they go into the studio and make a new album, please. It would be really good to get some more music for these guys.
Could we do a podcast in the future where we get a studio and we get Adam in the studio and then we just ask him to sing Queen songs that we like? Is that possible?
Yeah.
I think it would be a good podcast, and I think he should be aware of that.
Yes.
I think he would like to do a good podcast. So
yeah, of course.
I think
I'm pretty sure that's something on his bucket list that hasn't been ticked yet.
I really want to do a podcast where some nerds ask me to sing certain Queen songs.
Is that better? Would you rather the nerds asked you, or would you rather sing to the nerds the songs that you like? Should we ask him to sing his favourite songs to us?
But
or
I
do
think
we
he
get him to sing?
We get to request them as well. It's for a podcast.
And I'd like to request Simon on drums and Giles on guitar.
Yeah, no problem.
Yes.
Well, I'm glad that we've got Simon on drums, because one of my requests will be Khashoggi's ship.
It's going to be a really good podcast when Adam definitely does that.
What song would you sing with Adam Lambert, Suze? If you could sing one song with Adam Lambert, what would it be? It has to be a Queen song.
Yeah. I like it's Queen too podcast. Big a question, and I'm Liar.
Oh wow!
I do Liar.
Oh yeah. I'd put some money on a Patreon account to hear you and Adam sing Liar together. That'd be amazing. Fantastic.
Well, let's ask him. Because he might be a bit intimidated by me.
of course, yeah. Well, has he got the level of detail that you have? We don't know. Yeah. It's the precision that's going to make him balk. I think next week we're coming to the end of the season. So this was a boon, an extra special episode. Getting to review an album by Queen, and it has been a tremendous joy to do. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as we have. And next week we're going to try and do something of a fan special, if you like, where we try and answer as many of your questions as we can and do things like find out what the album cover ranking is when we factor in all of your top 10. So please send them in to queenpod@thequeenpodcast.com. You can comment at the Queen Pod on Twitter and Instagram. Please take the time to give us a star rating on your podcast platform. Give us a little review. It is important. It will help. And just spread the word amongst Queen fandom in general, please, that we're here and we love Queen as much as you. So thank you, Suze, Simon, John, and producer Giles. Goodbye!
Bye!
This has been The Queen Pod, a Seven Seas Films production, edited and produced by me, Fergus March. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram, and stay in touch by emailing queenpod@thequeenpodcast.com. Thanks for listening and see you next time.